Jim, the folks from SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, they've been on the program numerous times as they talk about their latest technology as they're listening for radio signals out there from some extraterrestrial source. You don't think they have a chance to detect an ET civilization. How come?
I don't really, and certainly not to take anything away from the fine astronomers from SETI, and it definitely is an experiment that captures the imagination. I'm sure you'd agree.
Yes.
But I use Drake's equation, which I think is what those guys use as well. Mm-hmm. This was an equation that astronomer Frank Drake, came up with back in the 60s, I believe, and it has a number of factors in it, and those factors all get multiplied together. And there are things like, what's the likelihood of a star having planets around it? What's the likelihood of, if it does have planets, that one of those planets is habitable, or how many of those might be habitable? What's the likelihood of life forming on those? What's the likelihood of that life evolving to be intelligent? What's the likelihood of that intelligent life wanting to communicate? And you can see how all of those factors have to get kind of multiplied together. I use the latest information with the extrasolar planets that have been found. I don't think I disagree with most of the factors that other people use. For example, I think that it's probably very likely that microbial life will form on any planet in the habitable zone. I mean, if you look at what happened on Earth, the conditions when life formed on Earth 3.8 billion years ago, it was 30 degrees hotter, there was no oxygen, there was much less water. We were under constant cosmic bombardment from asteroids and meteors and things. And there's good evidence that even under those conditions, life formed twice on Earth. Because what was happening at that time was every once in a while there'd be such a massive asteroid would hit the planet that it would generate such tremendous heat that it would effectively be what's referred to as a sterilizing event. Any life that there might have been on the planet up to that point was going to get wiped out.
It was all cooked, right?
Completely cooked.
Yeah.
But what happened was there's evidence of microbial fossils in Greenland 3.85 billion years ago before the last sterilization event occurred. So in other words, that shows that life formed at least two times, and some people think, maybe many more times than that. And that's really important because, one of the arguments for the rare life idea is that it's just such a rare occurrence for it to form at all. But if it can form in such, drastic circumstances twice on our planet, that's good evidence that it's not hard for life to form on other planets that might be in a habitable zone.
Right.
There's also little bugs and things that really can survive amazing, conditions. They call them extremophiles. Things like tardigrades are little 1 millimeter size bugs. They can survive without water for over 100 years. They've been able to survive absolute zero temperatures or very close to it, 300 degrees Fahrenheit, 10 days of vacuum in a space, pressures six times the pressure at the bottom of the ocean, lethal doses of X-rays. I mean, stuff that would just kill anything else, these things have no problem with. So, we find life that thrives, microbes that thrive in sulfuric acid and some that eat radioactive elements. And, given all of that, it's not hard for microbial life to form, it seems. But then one of the other factors in Drake's equation is, if microbial life forms, what's the likelihood that it will evolve into intelligent life?
Right.
And, that's a much more debatable one, and I actually use a number that's probably a little more conservative than some other people use. I say it's a 1 in 1,000 chance. But some of the factors beyond that, that's where I kind of depart from the other things that I've seen. So, for example...
But even if it's 1 in 1,000, though, Jim, if you factor in the habitable planets based on estimates, you're still talking about a lot of civilizations.
Oh, absolutely. And don't get me wrong. I think the flip side of this question is, do I think there's life out there? intelligent life, and I think there is, just for that reason, George. But can we communicate with it using radio waves is a different question, because you have to kind of factor in what's the duration of a civilization that's going to use radio wave technology.
So your concern, though, Jim, is not that it's not out there,
right,
intelligent life, but that the way they're going about it, they're not going to find it that way.
Exactly. And I can't say that they could come up with anything better. This is what we have that we know to communicate with.
It's today. Yeah.
It's the only, perhaps the only option today. But, you know, why did radio even evolve, or not evolve, but why did the technology grow on our planet? It had a lot to do with the fact that we have an ionosphere that bends radio waves. So they propagate very well. Not all planets have that. Or maybe, you know, some other civilization got wired for broadband before they discovered radio, or maybe they communicate via telepathy or something completely unknown to us. Well, you know, that has to get factored in, the likelihood that they would actually use radio. And then you factor in how long of a duration is radio going to be. And actually, radio is it's in a decline, as you know. Shortwave radio is in serious decline. And our communications now is via low-power Wi-Fi connections, which from space looks just like broadband noise. It's so small, even, you know, all the wireless routers in the world added up are just going to generate noise.
And SETI's making the assumption, Jim, that the evolutionary process of radio waves is the same throughout the universe. And I think what you're trying to say is that's not the case.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that's a huge part of it. And then you have to say, let's just, you know, take the argument that we can pump, say, a megawatt of radio power into something the size of the Arecibo dish. That actually only reaches about half the galaxy before it gets absorbed into or down to the level of cosmic background radiation. The other civilization would have to be doing the same thing at exactly the same time, pointed directly at us rather than any of the other billions and billions of stars in the galaxy. And they would have to use the same frequency at the same time we're using that same frequency. So when you factor all these things in here, I got a number which was, you know, 1 times 10 to the minus 22. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
So would you disband the project if you were them, or what?
I don't know. I think it has a lot of value in the sense that, like a lot of research projects, that they generate funding that, you know, cause new technology to be developed. I'm sure we've gotten better satellite dishes out of this technology. We've gotten better, you know, high-powered low noise amplifiers and things like that. So, you know, there's value to it. I just don't think. I think it's extremely low probability that we'll contact anybody this way.